the weekend, which means it's time for Jill on Money, the show that makes money fun and just happens to answer all your financial questions. Here's your host, Jill Schlesinger.
Welcome to Jill on Money. It's the first weekend in June, and I am delighted that you are joining us today for our second hour. You know, some people, they kind of like chill out a little bit the first hour. They get really psyched about the interview segment, but other people, they dive right in. Doesn't matter what kind of person you are, because you can always get the whole show, even if you missed any part of it. You can go to our super cool new YouTube channel that Mark set up. Just search Jill Schlesinger. Mark, it's still just search Jill Schlesinger, right? It's not like we don't have Jill on Money yet, right? All right, just search Jill Schlesinger. There's a CH in there. It can be very off-putting to people, I know, but it's SCH. Anyway, today in our interview segment, this was a really challenging interviewee because I feel like I'm about to go into a therapy session. And not that there's anything wrong with that, because I'm a great lover of therapy. However, I am about to get undressed in front of my entire listening audience with Dr. Tasha Yurek. She is an organizational psychologist researcher and New York Times bestselling author. She's helped thousands of professionals improve their self-awareness and success. And why are we having her on the program today? She has written a new book. The book is called Insight. And check out this subtitle: Why We're Not as Self-Aware as We Think, and How Seeing Ourselves Clearly Helps Us Succeed at Work and in Life. Tasha Yurek, welcome to Jill on Money. And wow, this just blew up my world when I picked up the book and I first turned to Mark and said, really, this thing is so long. I got to read this. He's like, come on, this is a good one. And I picked it up. And also I felt a little bit challenged because I tend to think of myself as self-aware. And now I'm thinking maybe not so much. So welcome to the show first and foremost.
Thank you. Our plan, exactly. I'm sure we'll talk about how most people do think they're more self-aware than they might actually be.
Absolutely. So first, why don't we just go a little bit about, tell us about yourself. You know, first of all, I say that you're an organizational psychologist. I think some people hear that, they don't know exactly what that means. So what does that mean? And what is that field of study encompass in your real life day to day?
It's a definitely small but growing field of psychology to assuage your fears. I'm not a therapist.
Damn it.
What I do.
Wait a minute.
I thought, right?
I was going to get an hour of therapy right now.
We'll make sure that happens too.
Okay.
But what I do basically is apply the principles of the science of behavior to help individuals and organizations be successful. So whether that's making money is a goal, whether it's executing on a nonprofit mission, whether it's making society better, whatever an organization and group of people are trying to do together, that those are the ways that I sort of help them, is through behavioral principles and really research. I'm not one of those organizational psychologists that talks about pie in the sky woo-woo stuff. It's really important because there's a whole scientific discipline around this. And there's so many things, especially with self-awareness, that the research tells us something very different than what conventional wisdom does. And that's what's so exciting about it to me.
And how did you get interested in this? I mean, because you go to school. Where'd you go to college? Let's start. Let's go back into your... Let me do your therapy session. Tell me about yourself, Tasha.
Oh, I'd love to.
And also, are you a Natasha? Or is that, like, what's your real name? Is it just Tasha?
It's just Tasha. My mom was very excited about that name. My dad apparently wanted to name me Ashley, so we're going really far back. I went to Middlebury College in Vermont, which was a fantastic school. For a while, I did think I wanted to be a counselor, right, because that's sort of the only concept one has about what a psychologist does. But I'm also a third-generation entrepreneur, and I thought, gosh, how cool would it be if somebody could invent a discipline of psychology where you help businesses succeed? And sure enough, that had been around since pretty much World War II, and I ended up having to move to New York City to take a class in it, and then I found my lifelong passion and went to study it at a PhD program and really never looked back.
And what, so let me ask you this. You said you're a third generation entrepreneur. Maybe you have your entrepreneurial spirit in your practice and in your life, because you obviously are doing lots of different stuff. But Was there a pull towards being in some sort of family business instead of being a psychologist?
That's a great question. You know, I sort of got the psychology bug so early that I knew, when you're 19 or 20, you don't always know exactly what you want to do, but you have a vague idea. And so for me, I wanted to apply the principles of psychology in business. And what I ended up doing was, you know, I spent about 5 years in academia, researching, teaching, finishing my PhD. And then I got to go into the Fortune 500 world and work internally with CEOs and leaders and everyone in between all over the world to really just help their teams and their leaders succeed. And then I did go out on my own about 6 years ago. So now I consult with clients all over the world and in pretty much every industry. But I joke that I come from a long line of entrepreneurs who don't like being told what to do.
I love that.
So
you're used to that.
It was a dream come true.
That's excellent. And when you were going into these organizations, what is the main reason that they bring you into an organization? What is your, you know, what's usually the cause of like, oh, we need a Tasha type?
So the smartest businesses and the smartest CEOs know that people like me can actually help them attain prosperity. And I know this is a money show, right? But I think there's also kind of a broader context of what that looks like. Yes, it's financial returns, but also it's creating a culture where people want to work there and where people love what they do and they feel gratified and rewarded by what they're doing. And that's the goal, is that greater version of prosperity. Sometimes when I'm brought in, you know, with my clients at first, it's because there's a problem. You know, I tell the story in my book of a leader named Steve, an executive that I coached who was hemorrhaging people. He was a very senior level executive. He thought he was doing a fantastic job, and yet he wasn't making his business plan. His people were quitting one after the other. And so sometimes there is kind of an urgent issue that I need to help them address, but it's also the smartest leaders who understand that it's just a good move from a business standpoint.
All right. So we're talking with Tasha Yurick, and she's just written a very cool book called Inside, Why We're Not As Self-Aware As We Think, and How Seeing Ourselves Clearly Helps Us Succeed at Work and Life. And before we get to her book, I want to talk a little bit about your previous book because I'm interested in hearing a little bit more about that as well. And then we're going to deep dive here and figure out why we are not as self-aware as we think. And I'm going to be the first guinea pig because, you know, before you guys all do it, I'm going to do it. Isn't that nice of me? Okay. So, while we're going to the break, go check out her first book, The New York Times Best-Selling Bankable Leadership, because I do want to talk a little bit about that as well and what makes a good leader. And then we're going to get into this book, and then I'm laying bare my soul, okay? That's what we're going to do here. All right, you're listening to Jill on Money. If you have a financial question, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. And when we come back, we're going to be talking more with Tasha Yurick. Stay tuned.
Question, call anytime, 24-7, 855-411-JILL. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger.
You're back with Jill on Money. This is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. I'm Jill Schlesinger. Okay, this is so exciting because if you haven't done so, you must check out our podcast, Better Off. You can get it on iTunes or Stitcher, Google Play, SoundCloud, anywhere else you find your favorite podcasts. If you have a financial question, we want to hear from you. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. And we are so delighted to have a special guest this hour. Her name is Tasha Yurick. And I just want to say Dr. Tasha Yurick, because I know you worked hard to get those PhD letters after your name. So Dr. Tasha Yurick, who is the author of a new book called Insight, Why We're Not as Self-Aware as We Think and How Seeing Ourselves Clearly Helps Us Succeed at Work and Life. But before we get to your brand new book, I can't believe you've already written another book and you're so young. So that sort of is annoying, but whatever, you know, I'll give it to you. So you were practicing as an organizational psychologist, essentially helping businesses and leaders get to whatever goal they lay out for you. You wrote a book that's called Bankable Leadership. And I'm wondering, tell me about what you learned by writing that book in terms of what makes a good leader and what are the qualities in a leader that makes people want to follow what they say or at least try to follow their vision?
It really, in my practice for 10 years or so before I wrote that book, it came down to something so simple yet so difficult, which was being able to balance the desire and the behaviors needed to create a happy, motivated team, while at the same time, a team that gets things done, that gets results for the business. And those two things at the same time, time and time again, both from my personal experience as an organizational psychologist and then from as a researcher, those were the leaders who were infinitely more successful. Where I found people sort of fell down was, you know, most people are good at or at least prioritize one of those things. They're either what I call the cool parent leader. Someone like Michael Scott from The Office, who, you know, just wants everyone to like them and don't really, throw the hammer down. But then there's also what I call metaphorically the trail of dead bodies leader, which is a leader who is all results, all business, all the time, and neglects the human element. Now, of course, it's never that extreme. But in my work, what I saw was that leaders were missing the mark at hitting both of those outcomes. And so that was what the book was about for me. That was the challenge I gave myself, are how can I write a practical guide for people that want to do both, that know doing both is important, but maybe who aren't quite there yet. And so that was the journey I set out with Bankable Leadership and came out in 2013.
And when you look at some of the leaders today and you hear stories, let's say like the CEO of Uber, this guy, Travis Kalanick. I know, you know, he may or may not be a client of yours. I don't know. But you hear these terrible stories about, he really sounds like kind of a bully in the workplace. And yet he's got an organization that has grown pretty dramatically. So are some of these leaders just riding atop an amazing company despite their bad leadership skills?
I think you said it perfectly. What I always say, and this is true for both self-awareness and leadership, which, you know, there's a lot of overlap between those two, but not having the skills in each, you can be successful until the day you're not. And, you know, with Travis Kalanick, I know his family had a tragic accident over the weekend with his parents. So I feel bad criticizing him. But I also think there are many other leaders who fit that pattern where, you know, they've got a brilliant idea as an entrepreneur and they push hard. And that's what helps their company grow initially. But when it comes time to create a culture, as I said earlier, where people want to work there and they feel gratified and they perform at their best, if you don't have those leadership skills and that self-awareness to know what you need to do differently, that's where I see a lot of leaders fail. And the interesting part is, it doesn't mean they haven't been successful up until that point. They can do it in spite of their lack of skill in those areas, but usually there comes a tipping point.
So let's move into this, your book, because your current book, because, you know, it is just, first of all, the title is great. I want to start with the first part of it, which is, so Insight, Why We're Not as Self-Aware as We Think. So in your working with all of these leaders, I presume that most of them really did think they knew exactly how they were perceived. Is that correct? Or did they come to you saying, like, I just need your help? But tell me a little bit about this idea around self-awareness and who really gets themselves, who doesn't.
So I've spent little more than the last 3 years exhaustively studying this topic. And I was surprised, in fact, that not a lot of scientists had looked into self-awareness. And one of the most startling things I found that frankly even surprised me was the following statistics. So the first is 95% of people think that they're self-aware, but the real number, the number of people that actually are, the percentage, is about 10 to 15%. And that's startling. And the joke I always make, that's not really a joke, is that 80% of us on a good day are lying to ourselves about whether we're lying to ourselves. Mm. And that doesn't mean that people don't experience challenges, that they say, you know, something isn't quite right. I think that's usually a glimmer of insight that can be really turned into a dramatic improvement in knowing themselves. But there are quite a few people that are going around every day and not really having a single inkling of the effect they're having on the people around them, or even something as simple as what is going to make them happy or what do they want out of their career or their life. And, you know, I hate to be dramatic, but I'm also seeing that we're getting less and less good at that. And so I talk about this idea of a self-awareness crisis. If we don't work to increase our self-knowledge, we're really not acting in service of our success or our happiness.
So, I mean, okay, I am one of those therapized people who thinks she is self-aware. Now, I think I know what that means, but what does that mean to you? Because for me, I think that self-awareness is sort of understanding, you know, who I am, what my challenges are, or, you know, sometimes the things I'm not so proud of in my personality. And because of that, it hopefully helps me navigate those my life a little bit better. And also, I think I have an understanding about how I am perceived, but maybe I don't. So how do you describe self-awareness, and in maybe a clinical term, or how should people be thinking about it who are listening now?
Right. And I think that's such an important question, because we throw that term around and a lot of times we mean such different things. My research team, you know, started with what we thought was a simple question of what exactly is self-awareness. And lo and behold, 800 studies later that we reviewed, it took us almost a year to find a satisfactory definition of what that is. And so here's what we came up with. Self-awareness is comprised of two types of knowledge about ourselves. So the first is something I call internal self-awareness, which is what most of us think when we hear that term. Do we know what we value, what we're passionate about, what our personalities are, what we aspire to achieve and experience in our lives? But by the same token, we also need to have something called external self-awareness, which is knowing how other people see us. And, you know, I work all around the world, but I see this especially in the U.S. There's this sentiment of, it shouldn't matter what other people think of me. And I really like that sentiment, but one of the things I found in my research is if you have one of those two types of self-knowledge without the other, you can get in trouble. So think about, you know, everybody knows this person, maybe a friend who spends thousands of dollars a year on therapy or meditation retreats to really get in touch with himself. But then you look at the people around him and they all think he's oblivious or insensitive or, you know, cheap, and he has no idea, right? So that's limiting him in his relationships.
Hold on, I'm going to do a quick reset here, because I'm going to have to go a break. And when we come back, we're going to follow up on this, okay? So we're talking to Tasha Yurick, and she is the author of a brand new book called Insight, Why We're Not as Self-Aware as We Think. We're talking about self-awareness, and we're talking about internal and external insight. When we return with Tasha, we are going to start to really dive into how you can be truly self-aware, hopefully helping you succeed more at work and in life. This is Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
...401k, IRAs, refinancing. She covers it all. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger.
Broadway is dark tonight. You're back with Jill on Money. This is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. And we're taking more mystery, not just out of your financial life, but out of your life. We're talking to Dr. Tasha Yurick. She is the author of a new book called Insight, Why We're Not as Self-Aware as We Think, and how seeing ourselves clearly helps us succeed at work and in life. And before we went to the break, we were talking about the difference between internal and external insight. And I love how you talk about these perpetual navel gazers. I think we all have friends like this, and I'm sure that some of my friends who are listening to this show don't know that I think of them that way. But we do. And I guess what I'm wondering is, how can you help somebody realize that there is this real breakdown between the way that they are perceived externally and how they think of themselves?
So this is a tough question to answer, but in general, what I tell people is, as much as the, you know, I call them somewhat dramatically, the delusional people in our lives can exact a pretty big toll on our sanity and our happiness, that their self-awareness journeys are not ours to navigate. Mm. And that doesn't mean that every once in a while we won't get an opportunity to talk to them, or you know, best case scenario, they might even ask us for our thoughts. But I also find that there is a lot of risk associated with deciding that you're going to make someone more self-aware. Now, the good news is, and my research has shown this, that it is possible to make dramatic improvements in both our internal and our external self-awareness. The problem, though, is we and only we can make that decision that we want to do that. Mm-hmm. And so my advice to people is, first of all, try to work as much on your own journey. Try to take that energy you might want to spend on someone else and put it in your bank. And two, try to manage as much as you can the aspects of that relationship you can control. You know, if it's someone who's getting on your last nerve, do you have to see them as much as you're seeing them? Or if you do, is there a way that you can manage your own reactions a little bit differently without taking on, you know, this massive project of trying to change them? I think we've all dated people that we've tried to change, and, you know, it doesn't always work out the way we want it to.
Or actually never works out the way and it never works out the way we think we want to, right?
Exactly.
Here's a question for you. I also want to point out that in this book, you have an awesome appendix. I spent a lot of time in the appendix just because I found that to be really interesting in terms of the resources and the way to really take what you're writing about and put it into practice. Mm-hmm. And I guess I'm wondering if you're working with someone who says, I really want feedback, but you're nervous. I mean, it could be your own boss, right? Should you take that bait or not? Because I feel like that can be somewhat dangerous territory for somebody.
I agree completely. I think you really have to look first and foremost at the strength of your relationship with that person. If you believe that they see you as somebody with their best interest in mind, who wants them to be successful, and if they've been someone that in the past you've been able to share a tough truth with and they haven't flown off the handle, those are two signals that it might be worth doing. But you're exactly right, I tell so many stories in the book of people sort of pretending they want feedback.
Yes.
And really not wanting the answer. And sometimes I feel like our gut instinct can serve us well there. If it doesn't feel right, especially if it's your boss, I would say abort the mission before you start it.
When you're brought into an organization and let's just say that, you know, you're asked to help the organization with leadership issues and you realize that there's a real disconnect between the way that the boss is perceived and the way, say, she thinks she's being perceived. How do you break through that? How do you, as the now you get brought in, you're getting paid to do that. Like, what? Take us through what happens in the relationship that allows you to kind of get this person to a different place.
And you're right. Part of my job is quite often to get hired to tell very, very powerful people the truth when most everyone else is afraid to. And
yeah.
The way you have to start with that, like you said, is building that relationship and, frankly, helping them see that they're not accomplishing and experiencing their wildest dreams of success. You know, a lot of times when somebody isn't self-aware, they don't know they're the problem, but they understand that things are not optimal. Mm-hmm. And getting that commitment and saying, you know, you have my 100% support, but it might mean me bringing you some information that you, frankly, you might not even not like, but you might disagree with. And do I have your commitment to curiously and openly looking at those things? And usually without that, it can be difficult. But I am constantly amazed at the courage and the commitment that I see from my clients. I talk about so many examples in the book, but the next thing I do essentially is to get a broad swath of, first of all, how do they think everything's going? And then I go track down everyone from their employees to their peers to their boss, their board members. I haven't talked to families, but there are other executive coaches I know that do that. And you basically come back to them and you say, all right, like it or don't like it, right or wrong, this is the perception. Where do we go from here? And a lot of it is integrating that with their own self-perception, but that's the way you always have to start.
We are talking with Tasha Urich, and she is the author of Insight, Why We're Not as Self-Aware as We Think, and How Seeing Ourselves Clearly Helps Us Succeed at Work and in Life. Now, she's a super smarty pants, okay? She is an organizational psychologist, a researcher. She's a best-selling author, and the book is really fascinating. What I would like to do when we come back for our last segment is to take us through some of what you really look at as the exercises to help people figure out, kind of understand like how to do this better. And so there is a 7-day insight challenge. Guess what, Tasha? I did it. I did it myself. So I did actually spend some time with this, and I found the exercise, as much as I think that I am a self-aware person, I found this really helpful, really helpful. So when we come back, more with Tasha Urich. And remember, if you've got a question, we'll be happy to answer it, just not during this exact segment. 855-411-JILL is our phone number, our email address, askjill@jillonmoney.com. When we return, more with Tasha Urich. We'll be right back.
From rookie investors to savvy veterans, Jill Schlesinger is here to help you. Call now, 855-411-JILL, or email askjill@jillonmoney.com.
You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone number here is 855-411-JILL, our email address, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We are talking with Dr. Tasha Urich. She is the author of Insight, Why We're Not as Self-Aware as We Think, and How Seeing Ourselves Clearly Helps Us Succeed at Work and in Life. Now, Tasha, I know that we don't have enough time to go through every single part of this book, but I did want to get to this part that I absolutely loved, which was called the 7-Day Insight Challenge. So can you talk about that a little bit? And then I'm going to make sure that we, just so everyone knows, we're going to have links to everything that we talk about here. But there's also a workbook that's available at insight-book.com, which is very cool. So what is the 7-Day Insight Challenge?
So the 7-Day Insight Challenge is my attempt to help people get some really immediate and quick improvements in their level of self-awareness once they finish the book. And I think, you saw this. It's such a complex and nuanced topic that it almost feels a little bit hopeless if you just close it and say, well, I guess now I have to start this lifelong journey with a single step. So what I wanted to do is just break it down for people and say, for these next 7 days, you're going to focus on one small thing each day that will dramatically improve your level of self-awareness. So I give one example. This is just one. I call it the dinner of truth in the book. And one of the days towards the end of the Insight Challenge, your job is to sit down with someone and essentially ask them, number one, what are you doing that they think is helping you be successful, whether it's at work or at home? And then the very scary but ultimately very helpful question of, what am I doing that's getting in my way? Or what am I doing that's most annoying to you? Now, you've got to pick the right person to ask, and I give a lot of guidance in the book about that, but that's an example of something that, frankly, doesn't need to take more than 20 or 30 minutes, but you can emerge from that conversation not just with more self-insight, but with a deeper, more impactful relationship with that person. And just like you said, I didn't put anything in the book that I hadn't personally done myself multiple times and concluded, yes, this is worth it, even if it's a little bit scary.
What if you have gotten stuck a little bit? Because some of this, I feel like some of this, as you said, you know, find your trusted friend and all that. But what if you just not sure how to say, like, well, I don't know, like, what is the passion? Like, I don't have a passion. Like, what if you get stuck someplace? How do you get beyond that?
One of the ways people can get beyond getting stuck for, you know, discovering what they want out of life, for example, is to make sure they're asking themselves the right questions. I devote a lot of time in the book to why questions are not as helpful in producing insight as we think they are. And the short story is, if we say, well, why am I not happy in my job, as an example, or why am I always, you know, coming home every day upset about things? That's not really a question that's going to help us move forward with purpose and focus. And so what I tell people is ask some what questions instead. Ask, you know, in the past, what have I done that's brought me the most joy? Or in my current job, what are the things I am doing that I like? And a lot of times, instead of sort of disappearing into the depths of our unconsciousness, which, by the way, we can't usually unearth, no matter how hard we try, we're looking at patterns over time. And that's what those what questions help us do. And they also help us move forward. You know, you'll say, okay, now that I know this, what's my first step going to be to help myself live a life where I feel like my passions are being utilized?
And I just want to give a few of these questions that I think are really terrific, because I like this one, which basically every single one of us knows. What types of projects or activities do you never seem to get sick of? Which is not to say that, you know, you shouldn't tackle things that are hard for you, right? Because that's how we learn, and we have to do that in every job. But to focus on that seems to me a really important question. Also, is a great question right now as kids are graduating from college and they don't know what to do and they just don't know what gets them going. I think that's kind of a cool thing to be able to say, you know, what do you like to do? Like, tell me a little bit about what you really like, and you can help maybe steer your kid one way or the other. Do you find that the question of, like, what are your aspirations, is that a harder question for older people who have already been set in their ways a bit?
You know, one interesting pattern from my study that I found was that there's actually no correlation between age and self-awareness.
Interesting.
And that floored me, because it's one of the assumptions we have. All we have to do is exist on the planet for long enough and we'll know ourselves magically. But I think the good news about that is it says that no matter what age we're at, asking ourselves the right questions and making that commitment to really practicing them every day is going to give us a benefit no matter where we are in our journey.
Her book is Insight, Why We're Not as Self-Aware as We Think, and How Seeing Ourselves Clearly Helps Us Succeed at Work and in Life. Dr. Tasha Yurick, she is the author of this beautiful book, Insight. And go to insight-book.com, also, if you want to kind of find it. But go buy the book, read it on your Kindle. It is not one of those normal psychobabble books. This is a real how-to guide. And I encourage everyone to take this seriously, because obviously, who we are on our insides is not how we are perceived on our outsides. Dr. Yurick, thank you for joining us. Okay, when we come back with Jill on Money, we'll finish out the show, do a little question, and of course, think about what we have to do next week. We'll figure that out. All right, Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back. You're back with Jill on Money. Thanks again to Dr. Tasha Yurick. If you missed any part of the interview, just hop on to our YouTube channel. Just search Jill Schlesinger. You can get the whole show. Also, check out the first hour. Okay, let's just finish up with a quick question. This came in from Sherry, who said that she just sold her house. She's retired. She's going to get $50,000 bucks. And she says, let's see, she wants to know whether she should use the proceeds of the sale to pay off a few old bills, some zero interest loans from big box stores and a car that she owes money on, or invest the profits and keep paying the bills monthly. Guess what? This is such an easy one, Sherry. Pay off the bills. Pay off the bills. Pay off the bills. And then whatever you have left over, put that in your emergency reserve fund, and that should serve you well. That, to me, is always such a nice thing to be able to do, just quick and easy, right? Easy. Okay, Jane is in her early 70s. She's widowed. She's still working part-time and earning about 60 grand a year. Fantastic. She also has a pension, inherited money. It's invested in growth stocks. She has not rebalanced to a more conservative allocation because she says she'd lose over a third of the increased value to capital gains taxes. Any way to transfer some of the stock accounts to bonds without losing so much in taxes? No, there isn't. But what you can do is what you could potentially use your other assets and use those assets. You said she has a 401k. I think that maybe what you do is you make your 401k a little bit more conservative, and then the 401k plus this money that that you inherited, that might be a good balance. That could be a way to sort of work around the game plan. You know, you could work around the fact that you have those growth stocks. So, all right, that's it. That's the program. If you have a financial question you'd like to help us out and get you on the air, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Next week, more fun, more excitement, more Mark. We'll see you then.